Tanya, Igeres HaKodesh, page 294, chapter Kofches 28. We're going to start the chapter again because we didn't get very far last week.
Excuse me.
With the numbering system at the top of the page.
At the top. I'm getting it. I'm getting it.
So, last Perek was Perek of Zion, where the Alter Rebbe is comforting the followers of Rebbe Nachman Mendel HaRadokah, who passed away, and giving them some deeper explanation as to what it means when a tzaddik passes away, that his the effects of his soul, which has now ascended to the higher spheres, is even more felt in this world than it was before. Now, along similar lines, but different, this is a chapter also of Nechama, of comfort. This time, it's his Mechutin. His Mechutin was Reb Levi Yitzchak Beditchev, a famous defender of the Jewish people, defending them against all accusations, always seeing the good in people. And he was a Mechutin of the Alter Rebbe, that his son married the Alter Rebbe's daughter. But he lost a son. I don't know whether it was the son that married the Alter Rebbe's daughter, but he'd lost a son. So this is in the small print. It says, "Mashkasa lemuchutonai haravagon amafrusim ishulekim kadosh Hashem neira yoy olava shalom." This is what he wrote to his mechutin. In other words, mechutin means connected by marriage. The great sage. No, mechutin means connected by marriage. In other words, if my daughter marries someone else's son, then the two parents are mechutonim. The well-known man of God, holy to God, his light should shine, peace be upon him, Pe'er Hador, this is all abbreviations, the splendor of the generation, Moreno Harav Levi Yitzhak, my teacher, Levi Yitzhak, Nishmasa Eden, whose soul is in Gan Eden. Obviously this was written, this title of the chapter was written after he passed away, but in fact the letter was written whilst he was still alive. Av Beistin to Kahala Kadisha Badichev, who is the head of the court of the holy congregation of Badichev, the name of a town. Lenachmai al Patiras Panay Harav Chosid Marin Harav Meir Nishmas Hayden, to comfort him for the loss of his son, the Rav Chosid, whose court his name was Meir. So Rav Levi Yitzchak Beditchev was the father, and he lost a son.
Explains how he passed.
I don't know how. It probably is written somewhere, but I don't know how. So the Alter Rebbe is writing a letter to him as an individual. And he says as follows, Lomanis v'chol parshas Miriam l'parshas Parah. Why in the Torah, in the Seder Chukas, does it tell us the story of the passing of Miriam, right? And in the same Sedra, it has Parshas Parah, which is the law of the red heifer. The beginning of the Sedra is the law of the red heifer. You know the story of the red cow, which is used for purifying someone who's been in contact with the dead in some way. So the next thing in the Sedra is Misas Miriam. The Miriam, the sister of Moshe and Aaron, passes away. And she was a righteous woman, like her brothers were righteous men, at Tzikonis. So the rabbis say, why were the two told together? Loi melachot to tell you, ma parah mechaperes, af misa tzadikim mechaper. Just like the red heifer atones, it brings purity to one who is experiencing the worst level of impurity, which is contact with the dead, and makes them pure again. So that's a kind of kapara, because kapara means cleansing. So also the death of a tzaddik cleanses us. We who are left, who are still alive and kicking, so we got the benefit. The tzaddik passes away, and the result is that we are cleansed.
But Miriam had leprosy for a week, and she had to go out of camp.
Correct. So you're saying that she wasn't a righteous woman?
I'm saying that to link it with the red heifer, she had to be purified.
Different kind of impurity. The red heifer doesn't help over there. Someone that has saras, which is wrongly translated as leprosy.
Yeah.
Because leprosy is not a catching physical disease. It's
right. Got
spiritual reasons.
Yeah.
So someone that has this leprosy cannot be purified through the red heifer.
Right.
The red heifer is strictly someone that's been in contact with the dead, either physically, by touching or carrying, or moving, or being in the same building as the dead body. Tent, building, room, whatever. So you're not a kohen, are you?
No.
A kohen has to be careful about going into a hospital, because very often the hospital has a morgue in the basement.
That's right.
And if it's in the same building, then a dead body, that is a dead Jewish body, in the morgue, in the basement, will cause every room in the hotel, the hospital, to be a place of impurity, and the kohen can't be there. So if he has to go to hospital, he should go to hospital where the morgue is not, in the basement. It should be in a different building. The old Hackney Hospital, the morgue was in a different part of the building. So,
what about the Royal Free then?
I don't know. I'm not a kohen, so I don't go into these things. Okay, so the death of a tzaddik atones. The Torah Lavin, Lama Niswa Davkala Parah Aduma, Hanasa Chutz L'Sharash Machnais. So now the Alter Rebbe asks the question. We know that all karbonis, all sacrifices atone. So the death of Miriam could have been put next to any of the sacrifices. Why particularly next to the law of the red heifer, which is different to all the other sacrifices? All the other sacrifices are brought within the confines of the Beis HaMikdash. Either they are in the holy part, called the Heichal, which is a rare thing, but sometimes the blood is sprinkled inside. That would be on Yom Kippur, for example, or in the Holy of Holies. But mostly, the karbonis are in the Azara, in the courtyard. But they were within the boundaries of the Beis HaMikdash. Whereas the Parah Aduma had to be burned outside the camp. Not just outside the camp of the Beis HaMikdash, but outside all three camps. There was within the camp of the Jewish nation the Machne Kuruna, the Machne Leviyah, and the Machne Yisrael. There was the camp of the Kohanim, the camp of the Leviim surrounding it, and the camp of the Yisraelim surrounding that. That's the way they had it in the Midbar, in the desert. When they got to Yerushalayim, they had a similar arrangement, but different. It wasn't where they camped, because they weren't camping there anymore. But it was around the Beis HaMikdash, you have these different areas. But either in the desert or in the Beis HaMikdash, the red heifer had to be burned. It was shechted and then burned on a pyre, P-Y-R-E, outside the Temple Mount. So there's something strange going on. Why is it done outside at all? Surely every sacrifice should be done inside the temple, not outside it. Chutz l'hanasa chutz l'shalish machnes. So, and yet, ela dechatos kari rachmona. Nevertheless, it is still called a sin offering. The red heifer is still called a sin offering. So why couldn't we choose another sin offering to compare the death of Miriam? Because a sin offering also atones. And it's not, the death of Miriam is not mentioned near the paragraphs which deal with normal sin offerings, which are done inside the confines of the Beis HaMikdash on the altar. And that is also mamash a kapara. This word kapara, it could be kapara, means like a cow, or kapara, which means cleansing. I think it means kapara. It's a kapara mamash. It's a real cleansing.
Yes.
So what's the difference between this cleansing and that cleansing? Why pick the red heifer? Amnam ba tnaidem izarakaidesh varizal. It's known from the Holy Zohar and the writings of the Arizal, Sodak Rabbonish al Gabe Mizbeach. The secret of the sacrifices which were done on the inner, on the altar which is inside the courtyard. I don't mean the inner altar because that's inside the Heichal, but the one in the courtyard. Inner compared to the Paraduma. Hein bechinas halos man minefesh abahamis shebenoiga al shorosh onim ekayim. This is an act of halos man. Now man is an abbreviation. It's memnun. It's Hebrew, not English. And it stands for mayim nukvin, which literally translated means feminine waters. So what does this feminine waters mean in turn? It means an awakening from below. It means that the Jew has reached out towards Hashem above. So it's the effort that the Jew puts in to reaching towards God. And that evokes a response from God. So when we bring a sacrifice on the altar, we have done something down here. We have brought the animal. And we have gone through a kind of confession that makes us realize that what bad people we've been. And really, instead of the animal being slaughtered, we should have been slaughtered. And it's a kapara because it's a self-analysis and an improvement. And that's my nukvim. Minefesh b'hamish b'negah. So this comes up from below. So what are we utilizing in order to evoke this response from above? We're using the animal soul. Benoiga. Noiga means light, but we've learned about this before, that it's the area of neutrality in the world. Remembering that there's three divisions, or three categories. There is holiness, there is the opposite of holiness, and then there's an area of neutrality. So the holiness would be a mitzvah, a sacrifice. The meat of a sacrifice is holy, it's not neutral, it's holy. An avera or a sin or something negative, tray for meat, is the other side. And then you've got neutral things, an apple, an orange, a piece of kosher meat, which is not a sacrifice, and it's not treif. It's neutral. You're not doing a mitzvah when you eat a nice piece of steak. You're doing the mitzvah keeping yourself healthy, but you're not specifically doing a mitzvah there. So that is called klipas noiga, which means it is neutral. It's klipa means klipa, the usual meaning of klipa, that it's not the essence, which is holiness, but it's noiga, it's got light in it as well, it's neutral, it's not a bad thing. And we're taking this animal, which is kosher, so it's neutral, and now we are offering it up, we're transforming it to become holy, and attaching it to God. And we thereby join the animal side of this creature, this animal, to its source, because all animals come from a very lofty source. Everything in the world comes from a lofty source. The animal soul of, let's say, an ox, we're told in the Mar Yecheskel, in the vision of Ezekiel, chapter 1 of Ezekiel, he tells there about how he saw God sitting on his throne. It's a very esoteric chapter, which is very hard to understand. A lot of Kabbalistic and Hasidic teachings explain what these things are talking about. But over there it talks about the four faces on God's throne, and one of them is the face of an ox, the face of an eagle, the face of a lion, the face of a man. So it explains in Hasidic teachings that the animal soul, which is in an animal like an ox, its source is actually from a very, very high place. It comes from God's throne. And it comes through the Seder Shtalshus, through the whole chain system. And the power gets weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker until it ends up in this ox or this cow. And then we take it and we bring it as a sacrifice, so it rejoins the soul of the cow with its origin. And in a certain sense feeds its origin. And by feeding its origin, that causes an effect that blessing is bestowed upon the world, In a certain sense, it's like feeding that spiritual level such that it should then turn round and descend back into this world and shower the world with tremendous blessings. So the source of all these animals is the four animals whose faces appear on the heavenly throne. Which carry the throne. They're sort of kind of faces, legs, sides. I don't know what it looks like because I wasn't there. But he says that Dalet Chayas, but one of them is actually the face of a man. But that's the source of the animal soul within man.
Right.
So he calls them Chayas. So one of them is the face of the ox, another one is the face of the eagle, and then there's the face of the Ari, the lion. That is the face of the man. And then there's a man on top of this throne as well, which is the source of the godly soul. And that is the face of Jacob. So, then you get the response. So the man is Mayim Nukvin. We're over the page. Page Kufmim Ches. Mayim Nukvin is the feminine waters, is the awakening from below, is the reaching out towards God above. And the result is Mad, standing for Mayim Dukhurim, which means masculine waters, which means like from above God pours down Hashpah, divine influence, into the world. And where from a higher level even than the four faces on the throne, it actually comes from the level of the Pnei Adam Me'alakiseh. There's a face of a man on top of the throne. And that is the face of Yaakov. And that is the source of the godly soul. And that is called, he says also in Kabbalistic and Hasidic teachings, it's called Malka V'Zoh. Malka means king. And Zoh means Zerampin, literally means the small face. It refers to the spheres in the world of Atzilus. We're now in the world of Atzilus. Because this throne that Ezekiel saw, is in the world of Bria, which is lower than the top world of Atzilus. But the Pnei Adam Shalakiseh, the face of the man which is on the throne, is already in the world of Atzilus, comes from a higher level. So by us reaching up to the lower level of Bria, we get a net gain, because we are then able to draw down from an even higher level in the world of Atzilus and bring things down into this world. So it's a great, great source of blessing. And that's what the rabbis say, that if the Goyim would realize what they get from the Beis HaMikdash, not just what we get, if they would know what the nations get from the Beis HaMikdash, they would have surrounded with the Beis HaMikdash with troops to guard it and make sure it was never ever going to be destroyed. Because the Goyim get benefit from it as well.
True.
Like on Sukkot, when you have the 70 oxen, which correspond to the 70 nations, and each day, the number goes down, but the total is 70. So that, the rabbis explain, Kabbalistic teachings explain, is a source of divine blessing to the nations of the world. But when they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they lost out on it. So they would have protected it had they known. But being Goyim, they didn't know. So, Achein. So that is happening with all karbonis, with all sacrifices. Achein, but b'sreifas ha'parah aduma, with the burning of the red heifer, and al yedei hashlochas ha'itzeres v'hezev, unisimus ma'im chayim ala heifer, nikur b'shem kiddush mei chatas b'mishnah. So, what happens with the parah aduma, with the red heifer? This cow, this red heifer is burned, shechted first of course, and then burned outside the camps. And then you take eight eras, which means cedar. Cedar is a very high, lofty, wonderful, beautiful tree. It signifies haughtiness. The azoiv and hyssop, which is a lowly herb, which grows very close to the ground. It hugs the ground. And the lesson there is that we take something which is very lofty and haughty, and we put it together with the hyssop, and it's to tell the person that is being sprinkled by these waters, you know, why did you talk Lashon Hara? Why did you talk bad about other people? Because you feel superior to them. Oh, it's so juicy to tell a nasty story about somebody else, because that makes the person telling the story look in a very good light. I would never do a thing like that. Yeah, he does these things. He's, you know, and the person enjoys, it's called Miskabed B'Kolon Chaveiro, that he is sort of, has pleasure from the downfall of the other person. Well, that's the worst arrogance and haughtiness that there can be. So we take the hyssop. God says, take this lowly hyssop, this little, yeah, and tola shoni means, a tola is a tongue of ribbon. So that's the tolas, that's the tongue. It's called, you know, a ribbon like a tongue. All reminding us to remove the arrogance and haughtiness that brought us to this talking about other people and the arrogance generally. And to replace it with humbling things which like the hyssop. So all of that is done. And then there's Mayim Chayim, living water. That means water from a spring, as opposed to water from a still well. You can, you know, in a well, if you dig down, you get the water doesn't flow anywhere.
Right.
It's still water. You can get down to the water, but it's not. That's not usable for the red heifer. It's got to be a spring out of the mountainside, moving water. So when that, and then, so what do? They burn the cow. And they put the cedar and the hyssop and the tongue of ribbon into the fire. It all gets burnt until the whole thing becomes ash. And then this ash, this like powdered ash, is kept. It's divided up in a certain way. We won't go into that now, but it's kept. And then, in order to do the sprinkling, you take a little bit of the ash. You take the Mayim Chayim, the water from the spring, you have a jug of this water, and you take a little sprinkle, like sprinkling salt, on your soup. Take a little bit of this ash, doesn't have to be a lot, and just sprinkle it on the top of the water in the jug, or the barrel. And you get it on the surface, you get like, you know what happens when you spread like a powdery substance, like talcum. If you put talcum powder on top of a glass of water, a little teeny bit, it would spread out over the whole surface.
Sprinkles.
And that already makes the water into holy water. B'shem Kiddush Mechatas. So the water is now called the water of holy, of sanctification. That's all it needs. Why it works, how it works, we don't know. This is another of the things we don't know, because this is the ultimate chok, the ultimate not understood law. Zois Chukas HaTorah, this is the not understood law of the Torah. It's the absolute ultimate one that even King Solomon, who did understand all the others, this one he couldn't. So we don't know how it works. Just a little bit of ash on a bit of water and you sprinkle it. And even if one little teeny drop, and this is after the person has been to the mikveh, you have to go to the mikveh and immerse. Their kapara, their cleansing is not complete until the water of the paraduma of this Mayim Chayim goes on their body. And it can go a little teeny drop on the end of your finger, done. That's all you need.
Sorted.
Amazing. Just a little minute amount. There's no immersion there anymore. And the Kohen used to, or whatever, the Kohen used to stand on a platform.
Yeah.
And so there was like, imagine this table is like a channel,
yeah.
And this is raised over here, and that's raised over there, and in between people can pass, and some, the Kohen stood on a higher level, and he had his water, yeah. and a sprig of hyssop, another sprig of hyssop,
yeah.
Not the one that was burnt.
No.
And he dips it in his water, and the people go running through, and he goes sprinkle, 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 and if a little drop goes on, on the person, he's already done. Vehi b'chinas kodesh ha'elyon ha'nikra b'shem tala d'beducha. So now this mechatas, this water of the parah aduma, is actually coming from a much, much higher level than even we reach with a normal sacrifice. It reaches a much, much higher level, and he calls it over here Tala de Bebucha. The Tala means Tal, which means Jew. And Bedulcha is Bedoilach, Evan HaBedoilach, which is a kind of crystal, a kind of precious stone. Now that is Kabbalistic terminology. for a very high level, beyond even the world of Atzilus. Kamash Kasa Bazar HaKadosh, Shehi Bechinas Chochma Iloha, Umaychas Timod Arechampin. This is the higher level of wisdom, and it's the hidden mind, or the hidden intelligence, of Arechampin. Now that is higher than the world of Atzilus. That already is in a level that's called Keser. Keser means crown. And there are two parts of Keser, the upper and the lower, or the inner and the outer. And we're now talking about the outer, which is called Arechampin. Literally means the long face, but that's what it's referring to. Chitsoinias HaKeser, the externality or an external part of Keser. It's not as deep as the inner part of Keser, but it's high enough. So it's higher even than the world of Atzilus, which is where we were getting our Hashpoah from when we have a normal carbon. So that this Paradum is reaching even higher. V'alo itma b'dukte tuva b'zor HaKadosh b'chochma is b'riru. And about this we've learned in the Holy Zohar in many places, b'chochma is b'riru. They will be purified through chochma, through this very high level of chokhmah. Ve'ishapcho chasheichel anoira, chasheichel anoira, and the darkness will be transformed to light. Da'ayno oylam ha'tikun shemizbara v'nistakna le'meichus timor da'echampim. That is the world of tikun, which is purified through this very high level of wisdom, higher than the world of Atzilus. Me'olam ha'tayu u'shviras ha'kelim, and it actually ultimately comes from the world of Tayu and the breaking of the vessels, which we have discussed on previous occasions, not for some time, I must admit, so we'll very quickly summarize it. Shenoflu v'biyah, that fell into Bria, Yetzira, Asiya, Kenoida, as is known. What it's basically saying is that when God created the universe, including all the spiritual worlds, he created the spheres. Now these spheres are godly emanations, godly powers, kindness, severity, and so on. But they all have a different way of operating. Kindness is giving and severity is taking. So how can you have two infinite powers that are opposite? They can't coexist. Two infinite powers that are opposite. You know the old thing about what would happen if you took an infinite force and applied it to an immovable object. You're going to get, something's got to give, right? So the same thing here. These are godly powers, the spheres, the primordial spheres, and they are coexisting, but they can't coexist because chesed and gevura, kindness and severity, are opposite. So there was a kind of breakage. That's called the shviras hakelim. The shviras hakelim meant that the light, the godly light that resulted from it, was very much muted. The Shvias HaKelim was because the light was strong and the vessels channeling the light were very weak. So the light, like the river bursts its banks. The light explodes out of the channels.
Yeah.
But the result of that was that only a small amount of light survived that cataclysm, and that light continues to come downwards, and this time the vessels holding that light are man enough to channel the light. So in the world of Tikkun, which means this rectification of this explosive situation where you have these infinite powers that can't cooperate with each other, the result of it was a situation where you have harmony, where the lights are muted and channeled and harmonized, so that chesed can now combine with and harmonize with gevura, and gevura with chesed, and chesed with tiferet. All of them can combine with each other. That's called hiskalelus or tikkun, and that is what he's referring to over here. But they house within them, these lights of tikkun house within them very, very powerful lights from the world of tayhu. They're still there, but they're not operating in the lower worlds. In a certain sense, they are here. Because where do these lights go? Where do this divine light go? This powerful, very, very powerful sparks, they landed in the world, but in a very concealed way. And that's what we are doing when we're living in this world and we do a mitzvah with a physical object. We're tapping this powerful resource, this powerful light, which is there, hidden in the physical world, which could not be achieved if we were only using the lights of the world of Tikkun. In other words, we wouldn't be achieving enough from the more muted divine light. We want to be able to harness the tremendous energy, divine energy, which is in the physical aspect of the world. The Rebbe used atomic energy to help us understand this. When the atomic bombs were dropped at the end of the war, and subsequently, you know, atomic bomb tests were done, the Rebbe wrote a letter about this and what we can learn from this. And he basically said that it teaches us of what power there is in matter. Ordinary matter has got all this power. The metals that they make the bombs from, it can be a hydrogen bomb, it can be a neutron bomb, it can be a cobalt bomb. I mean, there's many materials you can make these unbelievable explosions from. Where's the energy coming from? The energy is coming from the matter itself. The matter, the stuff of which this table is made, is held together by unbelievable forces. And it's the splitting of those forces that releases the energy in the atomic explosion. Well, it's either fission or fusion. It's either putting it together or splitting it asunder. But it's all there, and yet, you look at this table and I don't see anything. It's all quiet and calm, nothing bubbling under the surface. How's it happening? So I've never explained, this is true in the spiritual sense as well. The physical objects in this world are charged with tremendous spiritual power. So when you take a pair of tefillin, which has been made from the physical skin of a cow, or an ox, or a sheep, you are tapping these tremendous forces and using them for self-elevation and elevation of the world as well. It's a controlled atomic explosion. What's a controlled atomic explosion? A nuclear power station. They're using nuclear power and they're deriving unbelievable energy just from a few sticks of uranium. Where's it all coming from?
Plutonium.
Whatever it is, plutonium, uranium, it doesn't really matter. But the point is, they're tapping this energy. That's what Jews are doing all the time. We're taking a physical object, it's our spiritual stick of uranium, and we're getting energy from it. We're getting power from it. That aids us and blesses us in this world and in the next. And we've got no idea how wonderful this energy actually is until we get there. Till it's all revealed when Mashiach comes. Ulazois nat metaheres tumas hames. And that's why the Parah Aduma can purify a dead, someone who's been in contact with the dead. It doesn't purify the dead body, because according to many opinions, the dead body itself is not actually impure. It only causes impurity in others, but the dead body is actually a holy thing. Afshu avi avois, even though the dead body is avi avois hatumah, which means it is the father of the father of impurity. It's the worst impurity you can have. Ulamata mata minoiga, and it's much lower than noiga, which means the area of neutrality. It's right down there in the depths. So just in the same way, we can use it as a kind of marshal. In order to lift something that's on the earth's surface, so you need a certain powerful lift, a powerful spring, a lift, a jack. But if you have to reach down into the very depths of a deep, deep hole, you need much more power to reach down there and to bring up this object than you would if something was on the surface. So that is why it is explained. The Parah Aduma is a much more powerful effect than any normal carbon. So now he's going on to explain the rest of the chapter. We have to finish here now. The rest of the chapter he's going on to explain that the passing of a tzaddik has got that power over and above the power of a normal sacrifice. It cleanses even anyone who's on the lowest of levels. We'll continue next week, please, Bill.